Interviewing Miss Virginia Chubb. Where and when were you born?
I was born here in Roanoke.
You don't have to answer the second one.
Okay.
How long have you lived in Roanoke, and what neighborhoods did you live in?
I lived in, basically the northwest section of Roanoke.
Okay. Tell me about your family, such as your parents, siblings, extended family that you grew up with.
Okay, I grew up on Chestnut Avenue and 7th Avenue, which Chestnut Avenue is sort of, you go up the hill, not too very far from Addison. And my mother and daddy, they worked quite hard. My daddy worked 4 jobs, and he never made $10,000. He would have to train people. And my mother, to have money, she would take an ironing. And once, I'm the youngest of 3. I have a sister, a brother, who's the middle child, and I'm the youngest. And once I got in 8th grade or something, my mother went out to work, and she did day work.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But let me tell you something special about my neighborhood, if it's not one of your questions.
Oh, no, please, please do.
Okay, my neighborhood, which is the 500 block of Chestnut, everybody in my neighborhood then, none of the parents had finished high school because they had to drop out during the Depression. But about 75% of the people in my neighborhood finished high school, and one dropped out, but he finished in the Navy, I believe. And about 65 to 70% of us finished college.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's
and really we great. Just, you didn't have, and we grew up in segregated times, but our parents had high expectations for our education. And I'm always so happy to tell everybody that. And everybody in your community, if you did something wrong, they could correct you. And coming to school here or whatever, it's like the community knew the family. Because in my case, we walked just about everywhere. My brother was the first one to finish college in my immediate family and got a car. Yeah. And but everybody in the community, and all of my teachers look professional. I mean, they dress. I went to Harrison Elementary School, where the Harrison Museum of African American Culture used to be. The school administration building over off of Gainsborough Road, that was the old Addison. That's where I finished middle school. We called it junior high. And then I came here, I could walk to all of my schools. I guess that's why we really didn't have an obesity problem, because it was rare for anybody to be what you consider to be overweight.
Right.
Because you walked everywhere. So, but no, I'm just proud to tell everybody about my neighborhood.
That's like a great success story.
Yes. And they all, that I know, if they're still living, they're doing quite well.
You just answered like the next 7 questions.
Oh, okay.
That was perfect. What was your home life like? Do you remember when you got certain things that, like, when you got a refrigerator, telephone, television, things like that?
Well, I can remember having, I don't know exactly when I got the telephone, but the television, I remember, we used to more or less listen at the radio, and I think when I was about in the 5th or 6th grade, we got a television. And if you didn't, like someone in your neighborhood got one, first you could go down their house and watch it. So.
That's all. Are there any stories that you have from your family that were passed down over generations, like about the Civil War or slavery or anything like that?
Well, I know, let me say this. I'm a product of the 60s.
Okay.
I was in college. Well, I finished high school here in the 60s, but I went to college. So I know you've read about the 60s. So I was in that group in college where you were demonstrating, picketing, and all. Now, I never did go to jail, but I did my undergraduate work at Bluefield State College in Bluefield, West Virginia. And it was really neat. My brother, I would go and visit him in college. I would catch the bus, but here everything was segregated. Once I got to West Virginia to use the restrooms, it wasn't any colored. Well, what, you know, everybody could use the same restroom.
So that was one of the most different things that you noticed about West Virginia was that?
At that time when I go, and I said, well, gosh, you know, we are just right across the line, you know. But they had that racism and prejudice too, because a lot of things were not integrated until the college students did it.
Did you ever notice any other instances like that where you left Roanoke and you saw different levels of segregation like that?
Or? I just kind of remember that because people, I guess, at the time that I grew up, even when I think about growing up here in Roanoke, you know where the Martin Luther King statue is? Do you?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I was on that committee to have that statue put up there. But it's a bridge. And if you ever heard of Henry Street, and that's where the Martin Luther King statue, it's a bridge that's named in memory of Martin Luther King. Well, if you would walk over there, but most people knew, according to my mother and daddy, you knew that you better get across that bridge before dark because things would happen to African Americans. And I can remember my mother taking me downtown, and they would have like color and white water fountains. And the colored water fountains was real nasty and dirty. So before I left, we would always have, make sure you do whatever you needed to do before going downtown because things were so segregated.
Now, do you remember what you said? Do you remember what specific line it was? That, like, any particular road or any kind of landmark that you would cross before things got bad, like, in terms of colored white water fountains? You said it was the Martin
Luther King. That was in downtown, but the bridge. Henry Street was the heart of the black community.
Okay.
It had all the black businesses. You had doctors on Henry Street. You had the shoe shop. You had the Dumas Hotel. The Dumas was the only hotel for years that African Americans could go to, as far as I can remember. And I know black entertainers could come and perform at the Hotel Roma, but they couldn't stay there. They would have to stay at the Dumas, which has been renovated now. If you get a chance, drive through Henry Street, First Street, or whatever, and just kind of look around. It's a lot of history. We had a pharmacist, shoe shop and all, and then right on, I think it's Center. I always forget that road because I'm so used to going, I don't even remember the streets. But we used to go to the Virginia Theater. That was a theater that African Americans could go to. They had a Roanoke Theater, but what would happen? You would have to, that was in downtown Roanoke, but black people would have to go up in the balcony to watch the movies. And that wasn't the cleanest and nicest thing. But the Virginia Theater was the theater that we went to, and that was right off of Henry Street. But it was, Henry Street was just the heart of the business and, you know, and everything. And we had doctors. Unlike now, I mean, it's better now than it was, but you had a lot, black people had a lot of different businesses. I own a cousin of mine that he owned a restaurant on Henry Street years ago. It was on my mother's side of the family. And then another cousin of mine, an uncle rather, he had an insurance business. That was my daddy's sister's husband.
So I'm pretty sure this is what I'm hearing from you, is that pretty much in on and along Henry Street and like in the surrounding areas, African Americans pretty much for a big part of it had all the most basic services they needed. There was no real reason to go into downtown Roanoke.
Well, they had to go down, say, if they wanted to buy clothes or shoes or whatever. things like that. But as far as doctors, and it was another special street, if you get a chance, go down, which is right off of Henry Street. It's called 4th Avenue or Gilmer Avenue. And that was another historic community. You've heard of Oliver Heal, the lawyer, Brown versus the Board of Education.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, his house, he was born in Richmond, but he came here at a certain age. That house has been renovated a couple years ago, and that's really nice. They have students from Washington and Lee University working there. And also you had like your Undertaker. You just had 4th Avenue or Gilmer Avenue along with Henry Street. There's a lot of doctors, lawyers, and you had your Undertakers and all, but those were really some landmarks. The Gainsborough area.
Gainsborough, okay. Do you remember any particular leaders in your community and what kind of roles they would play?
Actually, years ago, the ministers were the heart of the community, and doctors. But you were educated. If things were going on, usually your education came from the ministers.
Okay.
And then we had doctors. I'd say doctors and ministers, because I think about my dentist. He was on the school board, very active, and et cetera. But where you had the large number of people, I grew up as a Methodist. Everybody in my family, and that's right on the corner of Gilmer and 5th Avenue, where I told you the kind of the heart of everything. That church is a historical landmark. And I guess I stayed there until my daddy left. He became a Catholic. He's one of the early founders of St. Gerard's Catholic Church. The one probably you pass by because it's not far from Addison. And then when I was in college, I started going. So I've been Catholic for a good while.
Okay. Mm-hmm. This is kind of a broad question, but what really strikes you about the way Roanoke has changed over the years from when you were young, from when you were a child up until now?
Well, integration, we're integrated now, even though research, I didn't bring that article, but research has proven that Roanoke is the most segregated city in the state, and some research says the nation, because of housing patterns. Now, I do think it's improved a tad, but I think integration, you know, things like when I was in school, all of the schools that I attended were segregated. And as I said, all my teachers were professional. They were role models. I mean, your parents were first your role models, and they always instill in you. When you go out in public, you be on your best behavior, and they always made sure you were very clean and neat and up to par. Like I never, just in the past 20 or 25 years, you would rarely ever have on pants. Wow. You know, slacks, women, and you always wore a hat. I just started wearing hats again about 10 years ago. But that was something when you went to church, you had your hat, your pocketbook, and gloves, and everything.
Of course. How did the railroads affect Roanoke? Well, there are studies that show, it says that, like, there's a lot of railroads in this town.
Yeah, Roanoke was considered to be, it was a railroad town. A number of people in my family worked at the railroad. When I did my undergraduate work at Bluefield State, I could catch the train and ride to Bluefield or other places. And it was just because that's where a lot of people work. Like I said, a number of people in my family work at the railroad.
Okay.
They were, you know, Roanoke was a railroad town. I work at the visitor center occasionally to tell people information about Roanoke. And I said at one time Roanoke was a rail town, but now it's a medical town because Carilion is our biggest.
Right. When did you first become aware of segregation?
At quite an early age, because you could just tell, you know, when you would go downtown and how, with my mom and dad, I'll give you an example. My dad worked four jobs and he never made $10,000. All right, he worked at, his main job was working at Shepherd's Orchard Supplies. And he would train the white men or whoever worked there. The business, when they would come in, and they would continue to rise and make more money, and he still was Leon, and he had to call them Mr. or Mrs. I think it bothers me today if somebody calls me up and call me by my first name and I don't know them. Sometimes I hang up on them. And I think about my mother. She would work for people, and the children would call her by her first name, and she's a grown woman, you know. And that really bothers me, because I think you should have, if you know people, I was always taught, if you know people and they give you permission to call them by their first name, that's fine. But that bothers me today if people do that I don't know very well, because I just go back and think about how my parents and other African Americans were treated.
It would bother me too.
Yeah, you know.
How did I guess you kind of just touched on that, but how did it really affect your life living here? I mean, do you have any? How were the white neighborhoods different than black neighborhoods?
Well, they were better kept, because they had, it's just like I told you, when you would go downtown. I'm just using it as an example, but the white water fountain was clean. The bathroom was cleaner. I wish I had brought that picture. I would use that and teach it. But the black water fountain, or colored and white, that was dirty and nasty. So that's how, you know, everything for black people, their needs were different. Even the cemetery was segregated. I was one of the first teachers to integrate Wasina Elementary School out in Southwest, along with a couple other African-American teachers. And we used to do trips to the cemetery. And the first year that I was at Wasina, you had parents who didn't want any African-American, well, not a whole lot, but a few. They said, well, they wouldn't want any, you know, in person to teach their child. So this was hilarious in a way, not funny, but some of my friends in the Catholic Church, we were having all these race relations meetings so we could be more integrated in the Catholic Church. So some of my friends, a doctor up at the Veterans Administration, a psychologist, and another white fellow that was, I think he was had a real big position at the GE. Well, we were friends. So the boy who left my classroom going to North Cross, his father was a barber. Well, my two friends went to the same barber, and I told them what had happened. They said, well, I know him. They said, what's the job? That's our barber. So they went to him and they told him, we won't be coming back anymore. And he said, why? You've been my customers for a long time. And they said, well, you said something about a friend of ours that you didn't want any in teaching your child, but that's a friend of ours. We don't appreciate that. And we're about integrating and doing the right thing.
Wow. What was the difference in pay like between white people and African Americans? And how did that affect the way you lived?
Well, like I said, with my daddy working all those jobs, and we lived in a four-room house and a bathroom, and you could, well, and it's five people, you know. So that would be a way, your living arrangements, even though I have wonderful parents, They just made so many sacrifices, but they taught you respect, responsibility, and religion. It was the three R's. It's something you know that was instilled in you.
Do you have any particular stories about how segregation affected way, and maybe like an incident? You're talking about how with the water fountain and everything. Yeah. Do you have any more particular stories like that?
Well, you don't want to hear about college. Well, it's a lot of things. I think I gave you an example about the Roanoke Theater, that black people would have to go to the balcony, and the whites would be downstairs where it was comfortable. Like St. Andrew's Church years ago, black people had to sit in the balcony. It's just everything was so segregated. Right. Yeah.
How did civil rights legislation affect the way you lived? Did it really change the way you were treated as an African American in Roanoke, or was it really just idle legislation?
Well, I would say it changed not only in Roanoke but across the country. I can remember when I finished college and we were going on a trip, some of us, and even though you could still feel it, you would just go and sit. Sometimes people be looking at you really funny, but you know, college students are the ones that usually bring, they're the ones that usually bring about change anyway. Not only, even today, if you want to change, usually college students are the ones out there, normally, they are the ones that usually bring about a lot of changes.
Right, and you were just mentioning traveling. Like, when you were in different places, was it substantially different than it was in Roanoke, the way that African Americans were treated? Was it better? Was it worse? Was it?
Sometimes people say if you go up north, but when we were traveling, you could just feel it everywhere you went, even though things were open, but you could still sense that people didn't really want to wait on you.
Right. So it wasn't...
Not all, but, you know, it's nothing all of anything.
Right. Was it not better in the north, as the history books will try and tell you?
Well, now I did not live in the north, but I just would occasionally go, and then I had friends who had lived there, and they said, well, people tell you that, but really, it's not that much better.
Right, yeah. Okay. As one of the first African-American teachers that taught in a integrated school, how were your relations with your white students in terms of race?
Well, I gave you an example at the beginning,
right.
But the... The majority of the children, they were okay. I can remember after I had been at that school a couple of years, and that was the first year the African-American children came, because the first year they sent African-American teachers, but there weren't any African-American students. So I remember maybe my second or third year there was this little girl. Never forget her name. Her name was Laura. And she was in the bathroom with my students, or the restroom. And the girls told the white teacher next door to me that this girl named Laura had called me the N-word. And so they didn't want to tell me. So they told the teacher, the white teacher. So then she came, and she had this little girl named Laura to come over and apologize to Ms. Chubb-Hale for saying, and I was teaching in sixth grade, that she was sorry for calling me the N-word. And so I told her I would not accept her apology. I said, because I was reared, if somebody calls you something that's not your name, they are talking about someone, themselves or somebody in their family. And I says, I cannot accept your apology because you are old enough to know better. Plus, you have been in my class, and I would always write on the board examples of what would irritate people of different races if you say things about them. I said, I could accept your apology. Well, the next day, her mom wrote me this long letter, and she said, Dear Mrs. Chubb-Hale, would you please accept Laura's apology? We do not use language like that in our home, which I was a joke because I had somebody tell me that's how they talk all the time. But anyway, I did. I went on and accepted.
So you said you wrote down, you taught a lesson to your students about...
Yeah, I used to write. We would talk. I said, these are things that will irritate people of a different race. And I would, we would go over that. And I say some things, just like black people, if they say words that will antagonize a white person or a Polish person or anybody, some words you just don't use.
Right.
Because you know that's going to aggravate people. Either it's going to make them want to fight or say things that they shouldn't. And I used to have a fun day on Friday. You could tell jokes. Or maybe for 20 minutes to, break the monotony. I said, but you can't tell jokes about any race of people, because if you do, all you have to do is substitute my race or anybody. So they knew up front, well, we can tell jokes, but we can't tell jokes about any race of people. I say, that's right. And even today, I tell people, if I'm in a group, if you're telling a joke, it can be a family member. But if you're telling about a different race, I don't deal with that. Because all you have to do is substitute another name.
Right.
And I don't think it's funny.
So race was kind of out in the open then. If you were telling your students about what not to do, then it was kind of confronted, as opposed to everybody just kind of shying away from it?
Yeah, I would tell them. And let me tell you this. I remember this child's name, Jeff. We were talking about the Ku Klux Klan. And he raised his hand. He said, Ms. Chun, hey, my daddy used to be a member.
Jeez.
Of the Ku Klux Klan. And I said, well, some things you shouldn't tell everything, And so his daddy came the next day, and he said, Ms. Chun, I don't know why Jeff told that about me, but I did. He said, I really did. But I have been converted to church. And I know that wasn't right. But yeah, they would tell you, I'd have children, once they gained respect for you and like you, they would tell you their parents were prejudiced and all. And I think the first or second year that I taught in a predominant white school, I would do home visits. And so I had someone, I'll show you some of these things, but on the whole, I had some real good experiences, because after parents got to know me, and some of them would tell me, I never had an opportunity to meet African American. Most of the ones I met, they were just, I guess they were saying they were different, I don't know. But to really get to know people, I always tell people I have such a diverse group of friends, because if you just have friends like yourself or your same race or where you can't grow. The only way you can grow and understand people is getting to know them. Like, I'm a life member of the NAACP. I'm a life member of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. My sister brought Martin Luther King's organization here to Roanoke, which has been here about 15 years. I'm a state board member, and I'm a local board member. Last year, the YWCA, I won their Racial Harmony Award. And they told me, now I'm not bragging, but they told me the reason why I won that award is because I had so many people of a different race. Because when I got a call, I said, oh gosh, it has to be in education. And they said, no, it was in racial harmony, because you had people, just people of a different race, writing these letters for you.
That's wonderful.
And they said, what else? And I was really touched. I really had tears coming up. I said, I can't believe it, because I really try to live my life like that, because I think the only way that you can understand other people, you have to get to know them. And some of my former parents were, when they first, that we were still friends, I have about 3 or 4. Occasionally we'll go on trips. We still go out for lunch. We do things. And most of them are not my race. And people's, gosh, you all are still friends. But anyway, I tell you.
Well, Ms. Chopale, I'm all out of questions. If you have anything else you'd like to share with us.
Well, I know it's time. This is in, I was showing Alicia. This is in the office in Addison. What happened last year, I've been hired back each year for 2 years to do a program. And it's done here at Addison because this is our history for Black History Month. And last year, we recognized retired educators who taught in all Black schools when things were segregated. And the superintendent, I had an extra one of these, and she framed it and presented to Robert Johnson, the principal here. And so Robert, and it was framed, and you can see it when you go out. But anyway, I wanted you. And this is the, if you get a chance sometimes, go to the Martin Luther King statue. I took that picture there because I was on the committee to help get the statue here, and they picked 4 people. So when you go there, you can say, I know that Ms. Chubb. They picked 4 of us, and we were SCLC members. The SCLC really worked hard to get something in memory of Martin Luther King. Now, initially, I wasn't on the committee, but some of the people in the SCLC, like my sister, we would have board meetings. They would show us hate letters. And this has been like, I think it took about 8 or 10 years. Hate people were sending them hate mail, all writing them all kind of letters and not really signing their names. Or every place you would mention that you wanted Martin Luther King. This is here in Roanoke in recent years. They didn't want it. They didn't want it. So finally, the bridge, the Henry Street Bridge, that's where the statue is. And Martin Luther King is facing the north side, and the Salem Avenue side is where you come up the bridge. And like I said, we would walk over there or whatever. But that bridge was refurbished. They were thinking about getting rid of it. But everybody said that was the bridge to kind of segregate the Blacks from the whites. This here, I was sick and I couldn't go to, you can look through there, Barack Obama's, but I got an invitation. And Doug Wilder, I went to his inauguration because I worked at the General Assembly. And this is somebody. And when I was teaching, Senator Warner, which was our senator for a real long time here in Virginia, and he came to Addison when I was teaching, and everybody says, not these, Senator Warner. I said, yes, these, is he going to any other schools? I said, I don't know. And when he was coming, you know how they have to come and check out everything.
Right.
People were coming over, checking to see if everybody was safe. Anyway, I thought you might want to look at some of these. And I worked when Governor Wilder made his announcement. I was working at the General Assembly. The Roanoke City Schools gave me time off to work with at the General Assembly with my delegate. And also I worked with the first year our senator, Senator McFarland, the school system gave me time off for about a week or two to go down there. And then the following year I went down and stayed about 5 or 6 weeks as one of his legislative assistants. So that's how I came in contact with Governor Wilder at the time, when he was making his announcement. And I think another most, when I was visiting at the General Assembly as an intern, our senator's wife, we went to the Senate Gallery. Have you ever been down there for anything? Okay. Well, if your senator knows that you are there. You know, they are introduced you. Well, see, I didn't know that his wife had told him that I was going to be there. And he got up and he started saying all these wonderful things about this person. I was wondering who he was talking about until they called my name.
Wow.
I almost fell over the balcony. And at that time, former Governor Wilder, he was our lieutenant governor. So, but anyway, I thought you might want to see
I'd love
that.
To look through these. I'm just going to turn this off.
Right? Okay. And this, these are some classes. Alicia.